Right now, time for our NHL Insider. Morning, Elliot.
You know, Gullison's becoming a big star, eh? Jim Rome, everything.
Mm-hmm, you know,
nobody's become a bigger star thanks to one stick toss than Glenn Gullison.
Well, Berkey was on with Tim and Sid, and then it was Treliving with Hawk. They're everywhere. It's all Flames. What's going on?
I don't know. You guys are popular.
Or their coach threw a stick into the stands and everybody wants to hear about it.
That's right. The javelin tosser, yeah.
We had a stick swinging incident last night, Elliot.
Oh, you should have seen it.
Oh, what happened?
Darcy Tucker's brother decided to unleash I don't know if I'd call it a home run swing. Or was it a driver off the...
It was Happy Gilmore.
Yeah.
Because he came up from behind
and had
some good momentum going and just absolutely tomahawked the guy in the back of the leg.
He's quite a bit bigger than Darcy, too. I mean, we're talking, what, 255, 270,
yeah,
somewhere
in
there?
It was the Boomer and Warner Beer League Championship game.
Wow. Well, good to see the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Well, yeah, I was going to say the one thing, though. Darcy's brother has never been criticized or critiqued as being too small in any way, shape, or form. He quoted me 285 last night.
What's that, sorry?
He quoted me 285 pounds last night to Tucker's brother.
Oh, my God. You know, I got to tell you, there was one time when Tucker was in Toronto, and they made the Western trip, and I think it was in Calgary. I was sitting in the stands, and his family was there. And I think I got introduced to his brother, but he said, of all of us, and he introduced me to his mom, and he was like, that's the one you don't screw around with. Like, we're all shrinking violets compared to her. And I just remembered. So Darcy was tough, obviously the brother's tough, but apparently they're all nothing compared to the mother.
Thank God she stayed home. Or we'd have burned down Father David Bauer last night. It was not them in a shootout.
Tough way to lose.
The Brew Stars were the big winners. We had no Hitman, no Flames, and we had decided for a while we were going to take one night and we broadcast it on the radio. Two dumb hockey teams. So we did full broadcast last night.
Rhett was the ref.
Rhett, you didn't play?
No, he can't.
I don't play.
He's very delicate, Elliot.
If I shoot a puck, my arms fall off.
The once rugged Rhett Warner is
horrible
really
official.
He's a muffin now.
Just an awful referee.
Did keep it close. I bet you just let them play, Rhett. Like, oh, I didn't see anything.
Elliot, this guy, two hands. Like again, one of the top three or two worst stick fouls I've ever seen in any level of hockey. Rhett wasn't going to give him a penalty.
We had to toss him. We got the word down. Rhett,
we had to send the word down. Rhett, you gotta. This guy's gotta go.
Oh, you really?
Yes, he can't play again in this game.
I like a physical game.
I hear there's a job in the Department of Player Safety for you, right?
Yeah. Hey, I want to ask you about the Montreal Canadiens. I know we end up talking about them a fair bit, but that loss to Boston the other night had to have been a tough one to take because of it being the rivalry, the Claude Julien connection. I saw your photo from the hallway there in Boston where it was just a throng of media to talk to Claude Julien. It's not going to be a playoff year. When do things start to roll for Montreal as far as either tearing down?
I think they're already rolling. I do. You know, Mark Bergevin's a pretty active guy. Other teams will tell you he's probably the most, if not the most active. He's one of the most... He's not the most active. He's one of the most active GMs in the league. He's making calls. I think there's a lot of action around Pacioretty. I think there's action around Galchenyuk. You know, I think he's willing to do a lot of things. Look, who's untouchable on his team? You know, probably Price, probably Victor Mete. After that, you know, who's untouchable? And, you know, they got whatever he does. He knows one thing. When he made the deal with Sergachev for Tampa, they were hoping Drouin could play center. That isn't in the cards, at least not right now. He's got to solve that problem. Somewhere, somehow, he's got to find himself a center. And I have no doubt that he's burning up the phone lines to do just that. You know, I think Buffalo's active. I think they're active. You know, last night, Pierre Dorion told me basically what his statement was, is that he's active. You know, I think, I don't know if I thought we would see this, guys, but it might be a bit of a buyer's market now. I think the teams that are the buyers might have the advantage, because I think we're getting more and more sellers as we get along here.
I look at the West, Elliot, and there's some incredibly great franchises in terms of the last decade or so that are staring at potentially a catastrophic season. The Blackhawks are the Crawford. The Ducks are healthy, but they're still out of it. Minnesota, all they do is make the playoffs. They're on the outside looking in. There's going to be some really upset franchises in the West because only eight can get in.
Well, I mean, the amazing thing is, you know, Vegas is 2 points out of the, they're 2 points out of the President's Trophy with a game in hand. You know, that's what screwed up everybody, is that they're sitting there because nobody thought they were going to be a contender and they're going to take a playoff spot from someone. And, you know, I do agree with you. You know, I wonder what Chicago does without Crawford. Do they pack it in? It's not their mentality. And I think they were already looking for defensemen anyway. I think Anaheim's going to be okay. They have been, I mean, the biggest thing that I have with the Ducks is, are they going to fall apart health-wise? Like, I watched them against Pittsburgh the other night, and Pittsburgh stormed back late to make it interesting. But, you know, Anaheim's, they're really good. They are a really good team, and they play really hard. I don't worry about them. But I agree with you on Chicago. Minnesota's going to be on a tightrope walk all the way. But look, Dallas is another team. Like, they, all the pressure was on Dallas to do well this year, and they're going to be a fight for life and death in the playoffs. Like, Ryan, that's this league now. Colorado had the worst season we've seen in how long last year, and they could make the playoffs this year. This is a league where it changes a ton every year.
And the thing with Chicago, last offseason, we remember the draft was in Chicago, if I'm correct, and what, Joel Quenneville walked out of a meeting when he heard about some of the deals that had gone down. There's already seems to be a bit of a fissure between GM and coach.
There's a big one there, and I think that's going to be the big question, is what does Chicago look like next year? There have been rumors about McDonough, Bowman, and Quenneville and their futures. Like, is McDonough getting to a point where he might want to do something else? You know, Bowman and Quenneville. I mean, it is insane to me to believe that Joel Quenneville could be in any trouble, yet here we are. And, you know, like, if Joel Quenneville hits the market, he could get a Babcock deal, you know, team's interested. So I think it's crazy that Joel Quenneville could be available, but there's clearly a disconnect. And that was what you're referring to, Ryan, is that every year at the draft, they have like a coaches meeting or a coaching seminar, and he was in it when the Panarin Saad deal came down. And I don't think he knew about it. Or if he knew about it, he hadn't given his support to it. So it broke, and he stormed out of there in full view of a lot of media. And then the first night of the draft, the first round, he didn't go. He was there the second day, but he didn't go the first day. So, yes, there clearly is some kind of fissure. And, look, I'll tell you, like, if Joel Quenneville gets fired, you know, he's going to be unemployed for as long as he wants to be unemployed. That's it.
Elliot Friedman, our guest for GSL GM City, your Cadillac Superstore. As far as the Flames, we've been talking about the search for a winger, potentially. It would seem like their depth on the blue line is all right. The backup, Riddick, has come in and played well. But it's funny to watch, because we've had the discussion. Michael Ferland, I don't know if his play, has it changed the conversation? Because he's on pace for 30, and it wouldn't be a stretch now to think he gets there. And it doesn't look like it's a hot streak. He's been fairly consistent, and has actually, he's not a... just hanging on because the other two guys are driving the line. He's a big part of why that line has been good when it is. Does that maybe cool Treliving in his pursuit of a winger?
I think what it does is it puts him in a position where he doesn't necessarily have to give up as much as he did before. I could still see him looking for a winger, but I don't think it's as desperate or as important as it was a little while ago. I wouldn't be surprised if the Flames are sort of maybe not the team that's biggest into it, but on the periphery of the Hoffman stuff. You know, the problem with Hoffman is he comes with term, and you've got to decide if you can handle the term. You're going to have to do a new deal for Ferland. You're going to have to do a new deal for Tkachuk. So you can decide what you want to do there. But I wouldn't be surprised if Calgary's kind of on the periphery of that one. But I think what Ferland's ability has done for you is that you don't feel as much of a pressing need that you have to get it done. You can sort of wait and pick and choose and decide what you want to do. I would think 2 months ago, they were a lot more concerned about what they were going to do with the wing as opposed to what they think they're going to do now. And I'll tell you the other one too, guys, is I think Riddick has solved one of their problems too. I think they were worried about that. Now I think that he's giving you the impression that he could win some games, because I think they're going to need to give Smith a rest at some point.
Boy, the Bruins are flying, Elliot. What is it, 14 games without a regulation loss?
15 last night.
Whew.
And you know, I'll tell you too, so we were looking it up last night. How many guys have won the Hart Trophy and the Selke Trophy in the same year?
Jeez. Anyone?
One. Sergei Fedorov, 1994.
All right, yeah.
And only two guys have won the Selke and the Hart in their careers. Fedorov is one, and Bobby Clark is the other. And you know what? Like, Bergeron, if Boston keeps going this way, I mean, the Selke might just be his already. But, you know, Bergeron, he might be a Hart Selke candidate. He's that good. And, you know, I'll tell you this, too. Boston's got a lot of young players coming. I think a lot of people thought they were a year away. I think they're sniffing around the Hoffman thing, too. And, you know, I don't think they want to deal any of their young guys, especially not the ones that are there already, who are becoming part of that core of the team. But if they want to make a move, they got a lot of good young players, not only there, but lower. They get killed all the time for not taking Barzal or not taking Kyle Connor that year. But at least that year they had three picks in a row. But at least DeBrusk's turning out to be a player, and Zboril, people still think, has a chance to be a player. So it's not quite as egregious, even though they get made fun of a lot.
Some people, and it's obviously Red Wing fans out here, two things. Why aren't fans going to the new rink? It's hockey town. Why are they not going in greater numbers? And B, the future of Ken Holland, who it's just one of those ones that just seems like, well, he's been there forever, he'll stay forever, but everything comes to an end. Your thoughts on both?
Well, first of all, the word I get from there, and I know a couple of guys who've gone to games and they say there is truth to it, is that the bars in the arena are so good that people, it's kind of the problem they have in Toronto, where people at the end, they spend more time in their suites or in the areas down below than they do in their seats. And there is apparently some truth to that in Detroit. I know people have gone to games and they've seen it, that the setup in the concourse is so good and the team hasn't been very good, so people tend to hang out there. And I have been told that there is some legitimacy to that argument. But you guys know, when your team is not as good, people don't show up as much. You know, the Ken Holland situation, he's one of those guys whose contract is up after this year. And you know what? I think that, I don't know what they're going to do in terms of the GM. I think if he wants to stay in the Detroit organization, there is going to be a job for him forever. However, you know, this Vancouver thing, the Vancouver media is pumping up the Ken Holland rumors every day. And it wouldn't surprise me that he could be on the list if Seattle gets a team, and pretty high on the list. You know, he's a Western guy. He may want to go back out there. I'll tell you one thing. I think he's kind of invigorated by the challenge. You know, he won, you know, all those Stanley Cups in Detroit. They won four cups he was part of. And, you know, people are sitting there saying, you know, he's lost it. He doesn't have it anymore. He doesn't know how to build a team. You know, Ken Holland, he doesn't want to, I mean, he wants to prove that wrong. And whether he gets the chance in Detroit or Vancouver or Seattle or somewhere else, I think he looks forward to whatever the opportunity is that he gets, whether it's there or elsewhere, because he wants to show differently.
He apparently has a summer place in Vernon, which would be convenient for the Vancouver or the Seattle Rumors, I guess, if you think about it. Talk to us a bit about the Penguins. They are in the last playoff spot in the East, but games in hand all over the place, and I don't think this is what we expected from the back-to-back champs.
Well, and they had their tough schedule early. You know, they had a lot of their road trips early. They had a lot of back-to-backs early. And, you know, I do put a lot of stock, Ryan, into this exhausted stuff. You know, the Kings, all that hockey they played, and now they're starting to come out of it. They missed the playoffs two of the last 3 years, and I think some of their guys are really starting to get back. I think we're finally seeing it hit Chicago, where all the hockey they played, plus the cap, some of those guys are getting worn down. And, you know, I still do think I don't think anybody wants to see them. Like, how would that be for a first-round matchup, Tampa Bay-Pittsburgh, if that was to happen? But, you know, I think they are tired. I think they are worn down. I think, you know, and I watched them last night. Like, that was a hell of a win in L.A. with their third goalie in there, and they played really well. I never underestimate those guys. It's like the Patriots. I never bet against the Patriots. I will never bet against the Penguins. Mm-hmm. But you see them fighting that exhaustion that some of these other teams have played. And they will go out and get another forward somewhere. I definitely see them adding some new blood, if not two forwards.
Columbus defenseman Jack Johnson requesting a trade. Any info there?
Well, you know what? I don't think they want to trade him. And I was really impressed by the way that Johnson and John Tortorella handled it. You know, I've tried to talk to Jack Johnson here and there. He's just not a very talkative guy. But I know that when he got to Columbus, it was a downtime for Columbus, and they appreciate his professionalism. Like, all he did was play and work hard. He doesn't say a lot, but he competed, and he's happy to play a lot of minutes, and he's a competitive guy. And, you know, we all know his circumstances with the bankruptcy and everything. And the reason he asked for a trade was his minutes were going down and he needs a big contract. It wasn't because he wanted to leave. He just needs to take care of his situation. And I don't think this was ever Columbus's plan to see Jack Johnson playing 13, 14 minutes a night. Their number one pair, and it is Jones-Werenski, and they really wanted their number two pair to be Johnston-Savard. Both those guys have struggled this year. And their minutes were going down, not because they had anything against him, but simply because he wasn't playing well. Well, I thought Columbus really handled it nicely. They met. They talked about it. They've decided to reunite Johnson and Savard, and they're going to see if they can make this work there. I know his name's out there. The story is true. But I do think that if he had his choice, he would play a lot and he would stay in Columbus. And to be honest, playing a lot in Columbus down the stretch for a team that's going to be around in the playoffs or battling for a spot and competing hard, you know what? I think it's the best place. It could be the best place for him to be to get a big contract there or somewhere else.
Thank you, sir. Have a fine weekend. We will catch up next week. Take care of yourself.
All right, you guys too. Come on, Red. Make a call next time, okay?
Yeah, I got to get off.
Watch out for the.
I was distracted. Yeah, I was distracted.
Thanks, Elliot.
Take care.